Welcome to episode 152 of Redboard Rewind. My name is Spencer Luganbuehl, and today my special guest is a friend of mine, the degenerate weatherman himself, Marshall Sterling. Me and Marshall go over three races from this past Saturday at Belmont Park. Those races are 7, 8, and 9. And some angles that we talk about are, how important is pace in those short 5-horse fields? And also, looking forward to the Saratoga meet, what trainers were super hot during the Belmont meet that we think are going to cool off when it comes to going to the spa. This is Redboard Rewind. It's the same old story in this cycle. We go back and forth. We go back and forth. It ain't good for me what we do this for. We go back and forth. Won't do this no more. All we want, always ever sell it. 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 All we want. And now I'd like to welcome in my special guest for this week's Redboard Rewind, friend of mine, friend of the show. It's Marshall Sterling. Marshall, how are you?
Hey, Spencer. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. Things are good. You know, we're 3 months into parenthood, which is a completely different ball of worms. Luckily, our kid has been, he's been very, very good. He sleeps a lot, like 10 to 12 hours a night. So it could be a hell of a lot worse.
It absolutely could be. I guess that means that you're not doing the 2 a.m. handicapping sessions. You're still getting your normal handicapping in at the right times then.
Yeah, thankfully that only lasted for about the first 3 to 4 weeks, where it was 2, 3, 4 in the morning whenever he was finally was able to sleep a little bit. But we have at least a little bit of a regular schedule at this point.
Obviously, we're about halfway through the year now. I know that last year you were kind of took a nice little break going into Breeders' Cup. What has been kind of your, you know, first 6 months of the season? I've been mostly playing Naira, Southern California. Where have you been at?
Yeah, I've been mostly at Naira. I did dabble again at Keeneland, although I got my butt whooped at Keeneland this year. But things have been pretty good. Naira has seemingly been pretty formful. I've been staying away from Gulfstream, although I've been watching it. I'm taking a wait and see approach with the Tapita over there. It seems that races are a little less predictable in the Tapita. I'm definitely watching some Gulfstream races and stuff like that. But for the most part, I've been watching Naira tracks. The California product has been interesting, I guess. The small field sizes have been really killing any value. And so it's been kind of hard to be able to have strong opinions that you can really press over there for me.
It's always nice for me too. And two of the three races we're going to talk about today, like, I still like the fact that Naira just, you know, in their pick sixes and their late sequences throws that nice little 25,000 open claimer in there. And just, you know, not that I don't mind playing, you know, whether it's Fairgrounds with like the 15,000 non-winners of two lifetime, like we do have $50,000 races here at Naira. And so it's nice that I feel like those races can end up being just a little bit more formful, even though they are those N2Ls that people struggle with each and every day.
Well, I think claiming races in general really kind of throw a wrinkle in, because you have to look at form, you have to look at pace, and on top of it, you have to look at trainer intent. Knowing the condition book is huge. Knowing what's coming up is absolutely gigantic to be able to know whether a trainer is just dumping because they can, or whether they're protecting because they're looking for a race further on. Looking at claiming races for some of the claiming crown races as well is pretty huge. So, you know, being able to keep up with the Naira circuit as a whole is really, really helpful. Especially when it comes to like New York Showcase Day and looking at some of the main claiming crown races that New York runs.
For me, Naira, as you and me both know, kind of my bread and butter track, Saratoga right around the corner. Are you kind of looking so much more into the Belmont form this year? Because I always feel like at Saratoga, sure, like there's always that Belmont Forum that does well, but I feel like there's always that one outside track. You know, a couple of years it was, you know, even Finger Lakes horses were chipping in and winning, you know, four or five races more than they would in a normal Saratoga meet. What are you trying to focus on the most right now for Belmont leading into Saratoga?
Well, I think it's kind of interesting. There, you know, there's a couple trainers right now that are really trying to maximize the amount of races there are, especially on the turf, that a lot of big name trainers are just kind of prepping for Saratoga. So trainers like David Donk and Jorge Abreu have actually had really good Belmont seasons because they're actually focused on this race meet versus Saratoga. And it's been really kind of interesting watching them. George Weaver has also had a very good meet as well. And Rob Atrus as well, trying to really maximize the amount that they can really win in the window that, you know, quite frankly, is probably a little bit easier since Saratoga horses are either prepping or waiting, you know, a couple weeks or a month for Saratoga to begin.
It was so weird with Donk because usually, you know, 10% trainer, very he is like just the average trainer there for the meet, and to see him over, you know, 20-25%, I was like, is this the same David Donk? Is it like the son? It stunned me, and you know, everyone's going to kind of, I think, hype in on that and be like, oh, you know, Donk had such a good meet. And I'm going to take the reverse approach and think that maybe he's going to shoot all of his, like, shoot all of the loads here, not to be too, you know, vulgar with that. But I just think that when you're 25%, when you're supposed to be 10%, I think that you're going to see him come out and go pretty cold to start off Saratoga. I don't know about how you feel about that.
I definitely agree. I mean, the last 2 weeks, he's at just under 50%. Which is unreal for mm-hmm. David Donk, much less any other trainer. So I definitely think that he aimed for this meet. He was really looking to maximize the amount of wins that he could take. And he took advantage of some really great racing as well. So I really think that when it comes to Saratoga, I would probably fade David Donk as well. I'll definitely take the same approach that you probably will, where, you know, I'll look to see how things are going. But to begin the Saratoga meet, I'm probably going to think that most of his horses are going to regress versus right now. You look at his horse and you're like, you know, they're, you know, four or five speed figure points below mm-hmm. what they should be. But his horses are absolutely running, and you have to be aware of that. If you aren't, you're left in the dust. And the other part, too, is his horses are taking a lot of money. Mm-hmm. A lot of money as well. So you have to watch that toe board as well.
Well, with that, let's start off and try and help newbies, intermediate, advanced players get some different ideas from these three races we're going to go over from this past Saturday. Belmont, first race we're going to start off with is race number 7. 50,000 nowhere to lifetime, 7 furlongs on the Widener turf. For me in this race, when I talked about it with Matt Bernier on the Friday show, I went 4 deep. I went pretty chalky with 2 of the selections. I kind of chose 2 outside opinions. And when it got down to it with the board, a horse like Brazilian Air and Cousin Andrew, I just can't play at those prices. So I just ended up kind of on Ginsu Warrior and also the number 6 Ghostly Prince, second off of a long layoff for Michelle Hemingway, coming off of a bullet work as well. What were your kind of thoughts in this race, Marshall?
No, I definitely had a similar approach where it's really hard to trust Cousin Andrew and Brazilian Air. You know, Brazilian Air being claimed off Linda Rice is always tough. Tom Morley's actually a pretty underrated claiming trainer. Mm-hmm. He does really well first and second off the claim. So I definitely leaned more towards Brazilian Air in that case than Cousin Andrew. For me, my top pick was actually Moped Dennis. Not only when I was a kid did I ride mopeds in the backyard, but, you know, this horse coming off that maiden win really looked impressive. Stalked and pounced and really drew off extremely nice. Now, granted, we're talking about Finger Lakes, we're talking about dirt, and we're talking about trying to transition that sort of form to the turf course. Now, Moped Dennis, the pedigree suggests turf. Jeremiah also tried to get this horse on the turf last time or two starts ago, and it got rained off, so he just kept it on. And I thought that if this horse is able to transition any, and I mean any, of that last race form to the turf, that this horse is going to be really, really tough. And I think also, too, is going to have the running style that is best suited for late season Belmont running. You want to be kind of forwardly placed. It's usually pretty tough, especially when the rails are a little bit out, to be able to close. And I really thought that, I really think the Moped Dennis could take advantage of that.
I think so too in this race. For me, something I'm trying to really do more and more is I want to see what the best last outfire was. That came from the number 5 Vocalize for Bonnie, or when it was under Todd Pletcher and Irad. Now we got Flavian Pratt coming aboard for Bonnie Lucas. 2 for 27, and I'm not even saying if the numbers weren't even that bad. It's first time against winners. Yes, there's a bullet work. Listen, Bonnie Lucas, sure, 12% trainer, nice, easy average there. This is not Todd Pletcher. The fact that this horse even still went off at the same odds of 3-1 kind of blew my mind. And if you think that the horse is going to come back and run a high 70 first time against winners, I have a bridge to sell you somewhere over in California. I just, looking over the race, when you see all these horses, I love your kind of idea there with Moped Dennis, a 72. If he can run anything like that, that fits in so well with all the lower 70s we see in here. And I'll go over quickly some of the other thoughts I had. Obviously, we'll start off with the Brazilian Air, which was my top pick in the race. 7 underneath finishes, 1 win, 11 starts. That's kind of scary. But I think the main part for me here that this horse would have been in was in a pick 6 selection for me, and not so much on the win end. The 74 last time out for Linda Rice fits in. Tom Morley is 24% with a positive ROI. So he's not just winning with cheap favorites. He's coming in with prices. This one obviously didn't go off at a price at 2-1 exactly. 4 for 4 in the money at the Belmont Turf Course. Hasn't won yet. To me, this horse is supposed to improve here. And they're jumping this one up in class. June 18th was the last race, so they're not even in the jail period where they have to bump the horse up. So, I mean, just huge, huge trainer intent for me there. I thought Ginsu Warrior being the other Morley in there. Usually, if you have a good one, usually why would you run two when one will do? A good old Magic Mike Somich quote there. This one went off 11-1 last time out under Javier Castellano. Gets Dylan Davis in the irons today. Listen, ran a 71-2 back. That race was just fine, I thought. That race was going longer. But I thought if, you know, Morley thought so much of the 4, why is the 3 in here? So I definitely wanted to use Ginsu Warrior as one of my plays. And like I had said with Ghostly Prince, second off the layoff, that's 71 last time out. Closing, raced against Cousin Andrew, the other favorite in this race. I thought that one just fit. And Cousin Andrew for Linda Rice being the other one. Had some good back numbers. But if you actually look at the last 3 times on turf, 79, 78, 72, going the wrong way. So for me in this race, I was 4 deep in the pick 6 and other picks, but I used Ginsu Warrior and Ghostly Prince and a Wind Dutch as well, just to try and make back some money, to try and make my ticket, make the ticket price back there with some long price horses. Ginsu Warrior 11-1, Ghostly Prince at 6-1.
Yeah, I think the moral of the story here is that the favorites felt kind of vulnerable. And for me, you know me, I love taking dirt horses that have turf pedigrees, mm-hmm. and trying to project that form onto turf. I love doing this because you get to find so much value in that. Looking at the pedigree for Moped Dennis, it says turf. Not only that, but Jeremiah worked the horse on turf, so obviously he knew what he had. To me, this just screams like, hey, we want to try turf. We're going to do it. And this seemed like a really quite logical spot to be able to do it. So I was pretty high on Moped Dennis, but I definitely agree with everything else you said.
Moped Dennis for Marshall, Ginsu Warrior, and Ghostly Prince for me. Let's see who gets it done here in the 7th right now.
Brazilian Air going out for the early lead. Ginsu Warrior runs in second. A On the far outside is Cousin Andrew, in between the Ghostly Prince, who races in fifth. Moped Dennis is sixth, and on the inside is 63S, and Amadeus Music is the trailer in eighth. Brazilian Air is the leader here by a length and a half. And it is Cousin Andrew tracking in second. Ginzu Warrior down at the rail, the opening quarter mile over the firm turf, 22 2/5 seconds. And it is Vocalize who sits in fourth, about four lengths from the lead. Then comes Ghostly Prince and a break of four. Back to Moped Dennis, Amadeus Music. 63S is now at the back. Brazilian Air continues to lead here. Ran the half in 45 seconds. It's Brazilian Air by a length and a half. Ginzu Warrior now comes on through to take second. On the outside is Vocalize. Cousin Andrew is in between horses. Then Ghostly Prince. The field is in the stretch. It is still Brazilian Air. The one to catch. Brazilian Air is the leader. On the outside is Vocalize. Then Ginzu Warrior. Cousin Andrew. Followed by Ghostly Prince. Late move on the outside from Moped Dennis. But Brazilian Air has built the lead. That will last right to the finish. Brazilian Air, wire to wire.
And Brazilian Air gets it done. 84, the winning buyer. Nice $6 at 2-1. I guess that when you think about it, you know, favorite to favorite, but it's always nice when they can pay $6 and not under $5. I think also, not that we made a mistake in this race, but I think, listen, this horse was an underneath type, but now goes to a different barn with Morley, who knows how to get them ready first out of the box. 4 for 4 in the money on the Belmont turf, so this one liked the track a little bit. And when you look at the 7 furlong distance, did have a second with a 77 buyer. I mean, Vocalize was the only other one that had run around it with a 78. That was going 6, though. Everywhere else, no one had really run the 7 furlong. So maybe this one had a little bit, you know, of an advantage there as well. Like I said, 84, the winning buyer. Moped Dennis runs second, 13-1. So, you know, I always think, if I can run second and lose with a 13-1 shot, I'm okay with that, because at least my handicapping was on point. Not so much the wagering, but you're supposed to lose with a 13-1 shot more than you win.
Well, and I mean, I was licking my chops to think that Moped Dennis actually drifted up. The fact that, you know, not only Brazilian Air, but Vocalize took quite a bit of money there. I was extremely happy with taking 8-1. On the morning line for Moped Dennis, much less 13. So, I was extremely happy with how Moped Dennis ran. Moped Dennis was never going to win, given how the race was ran and how well Brazilian Air ran. But boy, you definitely can't be disappointed with the ride that Jose Ortiz gave. And I would love to be able to bet this horse back on the turf in similar conditions.
And I will say this for newer players, instead of playing 3-horse boxes and stuff like that, if you really like a long shot like this and you're not hating the favorite, it's always good to play that little favorite over the long shot as well. And you can also play it reverse in case, you know, for some reason you win and you hit the exacta. But I mean, for $1, it's paid $30. I mean, that pays for the win bet. That pays for a lot of stuff, and gets you, you know, if you're down for the day, can get you unstuck pretty easy with a price like that. Listen, Ginsu Warrior ran third, and I got Ghostly Prince running fourth. Did they run fine? I mean, a 71 for Ginsu Warrior pretty much just kind of ran back to the old numbers that we've seen. But I thought a low 70 would get it done here. And when a horse like Brazilian Air improves, you know, up to an 84, I'm going to lose the race a little bit when I'm trying to look at that from a buyer figure point. Ghostly Prince, like I had said, kind of ran the same figure right back. We'll see. This one's always been on the turf. First for Kelsey Darren, now for Michelle Hemingway. We'll have to see where this one goes next time out. But at the end of the day, a formful race, at least one of my 4 contenders technically won, even though I had to play 2 of the longer shots. I thought they ran fine.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I keyed around Moped Dennis and exactas and tries. So I, you know, for me, especially if I have a longer priced horse that I really do like, I will key, and I will key around exactas and trifectas. So whether that horse finishes first or second, or first, second, or third for a trifecta, you know, then I just hope that, you know, the rest of the horses that I have, I'm really good with. So, I thought that this race was was very hittable in that sense, especially fading Vocalize, you know, Bonnie Lucas trying to claim off of Todd Pletcher. No offense to Bonnie Lucas, but not Hall of Famer Todd Pletcher. And especially since Todd Pletcher went from maiden special weights down to maiden claiming 40, which is not the top of the maiden claiming ranks. It just smelled like Todd was trying to get rid of the horse, and that was all they really wanted to accomplish with that. So, I thought that this race was pretty formful overall. I agree.
Last statement I'll make is also the fact that if you look at the Linda Rice horse, Cousin Andrew did go backwards again down to a 56. We'll have to see where that one pops up as well. Let's move into the next race, race number 8, the Grade 2 Mother Goose, 1-1-60 miles on the dirt, short field. I was against the 9-5 shot on the rail, Shahama for Todd Pletcher. Just don't want a horse that's coming from so far back like this one was in the Kentucky Oaks. Listen, those Maidan races and all that, they're fine. I just want a horse that I thought was a little bit more seasoned here in the States. I like Venti Valentine. I thought the Gazelle race and the Busher, for what they were starting off this year, could be absolutely fine in this type of race. And listen, just like in the Derby, the Kentucky Oaks, if a horse runs bad, I'm willing to cross a line through it. Another horse I wanted no part in was Juju's Map. Listen, this one was very, very consistent, slowly improving from a 77 to an 80, 84, 85, 87. But I've never seen more than a 3 buyer jump point. Technically, if you look at the two horses, the Busher Invitational being the biggest figure, but the Gazelle also fit really well there. Listen, a horse like Juju's Map could win this race. I just didn't want to go for the chalk. I want to get a little bit of price on my selection.
Yeah, I mean, Juju's Map being even money on the morning line, everyone and their brother, sister, cousin, mom, dad knew that this horse was going to be shorter. And, you know, the race doesn't really set up well for Juju's Map. Looking at previous races, you know, when facing actual competition that has pace, you know, like Echo Zulu, mm-hmm. this horse was not able to get the lead and not able to win. So I was really, really against Juju's Map overall. Not only from a pace standpoint, but also from a just from a value standpoint. So from there, you go next to Shahama. Shahama was bet down so hard in the Kentucky Oaks. Mm-hmm. And for what reason, I still don't know. Shahama was working, I guess, lights out for the Kentucky Oaks, was working with Nest. Everyone thought that Shahama was going to be able to beat Nest. Well, turns out Nest is really good, and Shahama has nothing for Nest. So I wanted nothing to do with Shahama. I completely agree. Toss Shahama out. I definitely didn't want Shahama. Venti Valentine, you know me. I love Venti Valentine going into the Kentucky Oaks. I thought she was going to get the run of it. She was sitting third. She was sitting great, and then had absolutely zero after she ran into trouble coming around the turn. So because of that, it's really hard to fade someone like Venti Valentine, especially if you cross the line through the Kentucky Oaks. For me, ultimately, I ended up on Gerrymander. This horse is bred to go longer, is really looking for stretching out. When you look at Gerrymander coming down the stretch and you compare how she looks to other horses, Gerrymander is so massive. This is a huge horse. And it takes a while to get Gerrymander to actually get going coming down the stretch. You know, finishing in the eight bells, that's a one-turn race and was dominated by horses on the front. Matarea and Pretty Birdie were both towards the front. And Gerrymander just had absolutely no chance in that race. Going back to the Tempted, Gerrymander was able to control in the front end. So my hope is that Gerrymander will be able to stock third or fourth, but stay within, you know, closing distance of Juju's Map, who's probably going to be the speed, and really just go. So for me, I love Gerrymander in this race. Gerrymander's my top pick, with Venti Valentine underneath. Midnight Stroll has speed. Juju's Map has speed. Venti Valentine has shown speed. Shahama in her races in Dubai shown speed, but probably doesn't have nearly the speed that Juju's Map does. So for me, this sets up for someone that can actually stalk and pounce, and really the only one that's able to do that is Gerrymander.
Four, Marshall. Going with a bit of a long shot here in Gerrymander. I guess I was as well with Venti Valentine going off at 6-1. Let's see if one of us can get through these favorites right now.
Gerrymander broke sharp and is out for the early lead. Juju's Map on the outside came away in second. Shahama is down at the rail, and right alongside is Venti Valentine. The three-year-old fillies race up the Belmont backstretch, and it is Gerrymander who leads by a length. Juju's Map. Now Shahama and Venti Valentine have moved to the outside of Juju's Map. And Juju's Map goes on with it and now takes the lead from Gerrymander. Shahama is in third, and the trailer is Venti Valentine, the quarter 24 seconds. Juju's Map leads by a length and a half. Shahama second by a head. Gerrymander down towards the rail, a break of two to the New York bred Venti Valentine, who is fourth. It is Juju's Map, the favorite here, leading by a length. Shahama in second through a half mile in 46 and 4/5 seconds. So they have picked up the pace here after that opening quarter. It is Juju's Map leading by a half length. Shahama on the outside, Gerrymander at the rail, and Venti Valentine. Juju's Map challenged now by Shahama, and the two of them are right together. They are heads apart for the lead. Gerrymander switches to the outside for the final quarter mile. Three quarters up in 1:11-1. Here is Shahama to take a narrow lead, but Gerrymander has moved up, and Gerrymander is now in front. Back running in third, Venti's Valentine is the trailer with a furlong to the finish. Here is Gerrymander stepping away now. It is Gerrymander in front, and she is going to win this Grade 2 Mother Goose Stakes.
And Gerrymander gets the job done. $15 to winning mutual, $95 the winning buyer. Kind of nice in a four-horse field when you pay double digits, isn't it?
Yeah, it helps when the favorite gets bet down as hard as she did. I mean, Juju's Map is a good horse. I think is ultimately going to be a shorter one turn horse. And I really hope that Brad Cox ends up kind of turning her back a little bit. I think 7 furlongs to a mile is going to hit her right between the eyes, unless she's facing inferior competition. A mile 16th, a mile 8th is going to be just too far. So I really hope that, you know, they really kind of stick with that with Juju's Map, because otherwise they're going to run her into the ground. Coming around the turn, Juju's Map looked absolutely loose as a goose. No one was challenging her and had absolutely nothing left. And I don't know whether Brad Cox was just overconfident and didn't have enough fitness built in since May. But I really hope that she comes back off this race and is able to bounce back. I mean, I don't know if I would necessarily count this race against her, but if she's going to be 1-5, 2-5, 3-5, I will happily bet against her again.
The Venti Valentine, as you said, that little experiment did not go well. I will say, though, when I'm wrong in the race entirely, I was also wrong about Shahama, improved 5 points up to a 90. I think this horse next time out could be dangerous wherever she ends up. I will say this, the kind of the story of this race being now only four horses, it just came down to pace and the fact that you have those notes on Gerrymander that seems to be the bigger horse that wants to stretch out. And a lot of times people don't like make those little side notes, you know, one turn horse, two turn horse. And when three other one turn horses, you know, or middling distance horses go up against a horse that wants to go a little bit longer and hasn't had a chance to really, except for going a mile, that can lead to increase in odds and a nice payout.
Yeah. And I certainly don't expect Gerrymander to be nearly as long as she was, for sure. When listening to the interview with Chad Brown afterwards, they want to stretch her out even further. They want to get her to a mile and an eighth and a mile and a quarter. So we'll see what that kind of looks like moving forward. But obviously an impressive run, and it really felt like Joelle could have easily set her down and had her going a little bit more. Coming down the stretch, he definitely let up and just let her finish on her own. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see where she shows up next.
It's one of the last races of the pod. Race number 9 was the open 25,000 claimer, 1 1/8 miles on the inner turf, where we always know that speed tends to do pretty well. Nice deep field here. We have horses all the way out in the 9, 10, 11 path, or post, should I say. And in this race, I went 4 deep as well on the pod. Jack the Cat was one I liked. Jalen Samuel coming off of a win last time at the level. Usually you want to see an increase in the class ladder, but sometimes, you know, horses just, they think that they have them right where they need to be, which is 25,000. Grand Journey and horses like Big Agenda. I was originally off Big Agenda and didn't want to play, and Matt Brunier kind of talked me into it, because if you like one, you kind of have to like the other. This one for American Cantor Masi being claimed off Mike Maker, which, you know, for me, I think 3 or 4 years ago, anyone claiming off Maker for turf, I would instantly downgrade the horse. But this one I thought ran so well last time out. I still think Javier is one of the better turf jockeys when it comes to just betting and ROI. I know he was last year. And one of my long shots at 9-2, Takafumi, the Brazilian horse, stepping up out of that starter allowance 25, ends up over here. I just like the way this one had been performing. Just really, really good form. Only one placing out of the money, and that was not even on the turf. So that was definitely one I also wanted to use as well.
Yeah, Takafumi, I completely agree. Not only the switch from Mojica to Jose Ortiz, but really the form and how the race was going to set up, you knew Takafumi was going to be really quite close to the pace. And you'd hope that that horse would be able to take advantage of that overall. For me, my top pick was the number 5, Big Agenda. Rob Attriss claiming off of Joe Sharp, which Joe Sharp has actually been really quite a good turf trainer overall. Over the past couple of years has really increased his turf stock and was able to win a stake at Canterbury as well. So, you know, I really think that this horse was really coming into the race well. Rob Attriss, first off the claim, you know, you're looking at 30%. And especially too, that this horse is kind of, you know, been a mid-pack closer. The way that Rob Attriss really trains, he gets speed into horses. So I would expect this horse to kind of, you know, have a stock and pounce look to him. And especially Rob Attriss had trained this horse a long time ago, but knows the horse at least. So for me, Big Agenda was my top pick. Number 2 was Grand Journey for Cantor Masi, just like, you know, my definitely the biggest reservation I had was claiming off Mike Maker. Mm-hmm. But Cantor Masi has been pretty good first off the claim, and especially on the turf has actually been doing a lot better as well. Was able to get Javier, who was on the horse last time out. So I figured that, you know, being able to get a jockey that was, you know, used to this horse, knows the horse, has rode him before, was going to be a big advantage. And too, I mean, Cantor Masi, especially the last couple of weeks, has not been on fire, but his barn has been hitting pretty well. So for me, I had to include Grand Journey. And last but certainly not least, I kind of had a look at Mo Ready. Mo Ready being trained by Todd Pletcher previously, claimed for Rudy Rod. Rudy Rodriguez has been doing really quite well, although his turf numbers are not nearly as good as his dirt numbers. They've been getting better over the past year, so that tells me he's been kind of putting a little bit of focus towards that. And this horse really did run well against some others in the field, and I thought kind of ran into a little bit of trouble in that claiming 25 last time out. So I was happy to give Mo Ready another chance underneath for an apprentice that's been riding really quite well in Jose Gomez.
For me, it was Jack the Cat. Going with Big Agenda was Marshall. Let's see who can win this claiming race right now.
and they're off. Moretti right out for the early lead with Smile Brian racing in second. From the outside, it's Takafumi in between horses Hieroglyphics. And widest of all is Grand Journey into that clubhouse turn. Down on the inside and saving ground is a big agenda. Up front, it is Moretti who has the lead here, length and a half. Smile Brian in second. Grand Journey on the outside in third, followed next by Hieroglyphics in fourth. And then it's Big Agenda in fifth, a break of three to Takafumi in sixth. Battalion runs in seventh, followed by Artemis Bridge and Jack the Cat. And the trailer is American Lincoln in tenth, a quarter 23-1. They are midway up the backstretch with Mo Ready, the leader here by a length. Smile Brian and Grand Journey right together, second and third, the half and 46-4. Hieroglyphics and the red blinkers runs next in fourth. Down on the inside is Big Agenda in fifth, who's moving up just a bit now. And then we come back to Takafumi in sixth, and Battalion is in seventh. The trailers, American Lincoln, Jack the Cat, and Artemis Bridge. Mo Ready, still there. Grand Journey on the outside runs in second. Hieroglyphics is next in third. Smile Brian, Big Agenda. Takafumi's now on the move. Farther back is Jack the Cat and Battalion. They are at the head of the stretch. Grand Journey right alongside of Mo Ready. Grand Journey now takes the lead. Mo Ready back running in second. And then comes a Big Agenda next in third. Down on the inside is a Smile Brian. Then Jack the Cat, Takafumi. And they're coming for the 16th pole. It is Grand Journey who has the lead. Jack the Cat, Takafumi, Big Agenda giving chase. Grand Journey is the winner. And it was a three-way photo for a second.
And Grand Journey got it done. 85 the winning buyer, 660 the winning mutual. Just thoughts real quick on the race, Marshall.
I mean, Grand Journey had the run of the race, was able to garner the lead and really go on with it. I mean, easily the best horse in the race, certainly watching the replay. I'd be happy to take Grand Journey coming out of this race moving up. My guess is Cantor Marcy is probably going to protect and move him up, but we'll definitely see where Grand Journey shows up next.
I think it was interesting too, you know, Big Agenda, Grand Journey finished close together. Now they get split a little bit. Jack the Cat got DQ'd for me, which kind of hurt my wager. I made a ladder bet of 2, 4, and 8 for 14, but I had that nice little show wager of $7 four times, so I still ended up making some money on it, on a nice little long shot there. I think it's always nice when you see a race like this, and it's kind of hard to make money when you have a lot of, you know, tightly contested horses, because if you don't like every single horse at 3-1, it's kind of hard to make the money. You had the one outlier in a 16-1 shot, you take a shot like that, and as long as you're right in the way you wager, you will end up making some money. And it was kind of nice that later on in this card, I kind of, you know, for what I burned early, I kind of made back and I made a little bit of money on this card.
Well, I think that's why you and I both really gravitated towards Takafumi overall, was because there was a lot of horses that have beat up against each other, and you're kind of looking for the new face. You don't trust necessarily who has won last time out, but you're looking to see if there's a new face coming in that maybe can take a step up from the last race. So it is definitely a very competitive race and one that you definitely had to spread.
That is all the time we have for today's podcast. I do want to thank my special guest Marshall Stoller for coming on and talking to me about all things Naira. Marshall, where can people find you to hear all about the weather for Saratoga? Because you know those tweets are coming fast and hard coming in the next few weeks.
Yeah, you can find me at G1 Handicapping, and I will definitely be forecasting for all races at Saratoga for sure. If you need a weather forecast for a track, never hesitate to reach out, and we'll get you sorted out.
Thank you so much, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate the time.
So listen to this podcast and the rest of the shows on the In the Money Media Network. I also want to thank my special guest, Marshall Sterling, for stopping by and talking all things from this past Saturday at Naira. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's president is Peter Thomas Fornatel. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. And our In the Money Media business manager is Drew Coatney. I'm Spencer Luganbuehl, and we will see you next time.